Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's Tabletop Gaming Advice Podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, but guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the Brave Block Party Podcast Network, the jubilant Jen Adcock, and the excellent Erica Bond Barbagritz. Today we've got myself, Ange, along with Jared and JT, and we're going to talk about taking over the GM duties for a group that has already had a GM for a while. Before we dive into the main topic, let's ask our get-to-know gnome question. What's one time you felt out of your league before running a game, but it ended up coming out to be a good time? JT, I'm going to start with you.
All right. So in the summer between my sophomore and junior years of high school, our main GM, I miss you, Joe, I really do, but he moved away to college along with a little more than about one third of our gaming group. We had 12 players in that group, like all at once. It was not a rotating cast. It was the crazy heydays of, you know, late 80s and all that. I think we had 17 characters across 12 players or something like that. And it was nutso. We actually had a co-GM for running combat. And anyway, so there were 8 to 9 of us left over after the older members of the group had graduated high school and moved off to college. And I decided I would step up to run the Linkmar campaign. And this is in the second edition AD&D era. And Joe was an amazing game master, and I had some really big shoes to fill. Fortunately, I had paid attention to him, as, you know, like how he ran the game, how he managed things, mm-hmm. what he did. So I learned a lot from him, and I'd been gaming for about 6 years by this time, so I felt it was time that I ran a quote-unquote real campaign instead of just randomized mix of mazes and dungeon delves. And that game went on to last almost 2 full years with the mixed attendance of people as, you know, summer activities came up. Seemed like half my players were in band, so they literally went to band camp. But this lasted until pretty much all of us either graduated high school, moved off to college, moved away, things like that, and that killed the group. But we had an incredible time with that game. We had so much fun. And honestly, it's near the top, if not the top campaign that I've ever run. And I was so scared going into it. And by the way, if anybody has read our Pay What You Want for Charity anthology, the 26.5 Shades of Scarlet, the protagonist in my story in that anthology is based on one of the characters from that campaign. By the way, hi, Matthew. I think you're a listener. So that was your character that was there in the anthology.
What about you, Jared?
All right. Well, I actually feel intimidated by running games every single week. But if we're going to be more specific, this actually brought to mind when I was getting ready to run my Rogue Trader RPG campaign, which is set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. I, at this point in time, actually, this isn't much different than I am now, but most of my consumption of 40K was not playing the tabletop game or reading all the codexes or anything like that. It was because I played the Dawn of War video game, and I read a few novels, and I saw a bunch of ads in Dragon Magazine when I was a kid. So that's where I'm coming into this, and all of my players are people that have been playing multiple editions of Warhammer 40K that have massive armies of things. They will throw out names of people as if I should know who these people are in the history of Warhammer 40K. And I was going to be running this Rogue Trader game, and I was like, wow, I don't know that I'm going to do a good enough job for these people that understand the setting inside and out. What helped was, especially running Rogue Trader, which is kind of the, you are a merchant with a writ of transit where you can go anywhere in the Imperium and make trades and even gasp deal with Xenos if it is for the betterment of the Empire. That was so much easier for me to grasp because this is exploration. This isn't, mm-hmm. you know, constant warfare. This isn't knowing who hates who or what planets are real. This is like, I can make up stuff. And it's true because it's out on the edges of the Imperium and it was great. And also I realized that I could crib a bunch of notes from Dune because that's exactly what 40K did with a lot of its lore.
Nice.
Yeah, I've felt the same way about, honestly, the Forgotten Realms.
Mm-hmm.
I have stated for many years I could never run a game set in the Forgotten Realms because I don't know the lore well enough. I think I've gotten past that. I did run the Dragon Heist campaign in there, and, you know, it didn't really matter. But for the longest time, I was like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly run in this setting.
Yeah, it is intimidating. The bookshelves you two see behind me right now two of those shelves, not the bookcase, but two shelves on a bookcase with nothing but Forgotten Realms books. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking the novels. I'm talking the role-playing game material. That's how much of it's out there. And I probably didn't even have all.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much there is.
Yeah. For me, the point I probably experienced the biggest imposter syndrome was Gen Con of 2017. I got asked by some folks to run an off-books Masks game because they wanted to play Masks and they'd heard that I run a good game. And so they specifically asked me, hey, I'd like you to do this playtest for me. Would you run us a Masks game? And I'm like, sure. And then leading up to Gen Con, I'm like, oh my God, what have I done to myself? Like, nice. These are people from the industry. These are people I respect. It's their friends. What am I doing? And, you know, I was anxious right up until I got to the table and sat down with these folks. And then we just rolled into it. And it ended up being a really, really fun scenario, which, I mean, it's Masks. It's a PBTA thing. If you're comfortable with the genre of it, generally speaking, you can run a pretty good game in it.
I mean, it's not like there isn't an audio record of you running an awesome Masks game for some people out there, too.
You know, I'm trying to remember if this was before or after I did the Masks game on She's a Super Geek. I should probably look that up. But it really doesn't matter for the story because it didn't change anything. I still had this massive amount of imposter syndrome going into the game. So I don't know. So moving on into our main topic, sometimes circumstances come up that have us stepping in to run a game we didn't expect to run, whether it's stepping in for a GM who can't run that night or for the foreseeable future, or there are times where we need to run a game for a group that is used to or expecting a different GM. And we figured let's talk about how to navigate that. So what are some of the circumstances you all have seen where somebody has to step in and take over?
Well, unfortunately, I have had friends that moved away that were running a game and therefore had to negotiate what they were going to do with all of the friends they were leaving behind as they they moved away from us. And I mean, I've also had friends that just either they got a new position at work or their hours changed and they might be able to game, but they definitely don't have the same amount of time that they had to actually prep a game and run it. I mean, that's some of the things that I have unfortunately seen from my side of things.
The beginning of the pandemic in 2020, my friend who was running our game at the time worked for the County Department of Health. He was about to be a little busy. So
just a little bit. Yeah.
We immediately like put his game on hiatus and I stepped in to run something. What about you, JT? What are some circumstances you've seen?
Like the immediate burnout, like the GM just hits that wall hard and fast. And there's no, at least from the player perspective, there's no warning that it's coming. And the GM is just like, nope, done. Sorry, guys, I can't run this game anymore. Or I need a 2-week break or a 1-month break to recover. Because there's GM burnout is a real thing. It's legit.
There's a lot of GM anxiety that happens inside the GM's head that the players never see.
Oh, yeah. The players could be having an amazing time while the GM struggles to provide that amazing time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the gameplay or the game they're playing or the mechanics or the rules or whatever. It's that the internal gears grinding inside the GM's brain. So I've actually seen that more often than other situations. Unfortunately, as we're getting older, our groups are getting older, which means our parents are getting older, which means sometimes those parents need some help.
Yep.
And that can lead to either a family crisis or a long-lasting care situation. You know, sadly, funerals, you know, deaths in the family, things of that nature. That can cause GMs to have to step away for a week or two or three while they deal with family circumstances. Or in some cases, if they're caring for a parent long-term, it could be years. And I've seen that happen on a handful of times. And unfortunately, and you know, me and my generation, my gaming group and all that, it's becoming more and more frequent because everybody we know is getting older and everybody in our family is older than us. It's, you know, it's a thing.
I mean, life keeps happening while you're not looking.
Yes, it does. Yes. And I've also seen GMs get sick or injured, like, you know, bad car crash. You know, fortunately, in this circumstance that I'm thinking of, the GM recovered physically. You know, everything's good now, but they were unable to drive for an extended period of time. So we needed a filler game to while he recovered physically from a car crash.
I know this past year at GameholeCon, I had one friend who was signed up to run games and then came down with COVID before con. And luckily, another friend was like, hey, man, I'll jump in and run your games for you. And of course, it wasn't anything he signed up for. It wasn't anything he was used to running. And he just had the other GM's notes to go on. But it's still at the same time, he jumped in to help cover another GM's unfortunate circumstances.
Sure. And there's actually a fortunate circumstance that can require a new game master. Hey, the campaign rolls to a graceful ending. Like, the story is told, the game is over, the characters are retired, it's time to have a new session zero with a new game. That's when we take advantage of swapping out game masters in theory, avoid that GM burnout.
I think some
of
those are
it's
myth.
Super rare.
Campaigns ending gracefully is a myth.
We've sort of done that.
It's a unicorn.
Yeah. No, it's not a myth, but it is definitely the rarer circumstance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Totally is. Totally is.
Although, on that same topic, I do think there is something interesting in the public vernacular now that was not there when we were younger and talking about how to run games, and that is, if you've watched Critical Role, you have seen Matt step away from running in between campaigns while he's getting ready for another campaign.
Yeah.
And that's when they brought in Brennan Lee Mulligan to do like a short campaign for some of the characters. And I thought that's kind of a neat thing for people to see, because that is also a thing that is true of people running games long term. And to be able to see that, I thought that was kind of neat.
Speaking of that, let's switch gears slightly. Let's talk about the different types of gaming groups out there, because sometimes when we have these conversations, we say the gaming group, and it kind of sounds like this monolithic thing that is the same for everyone, and it's not. There are groups where you have the quote-unquote forever GM, who is the one who always runs.
Sure.
We have groups where, like the My Saturday group, it's a rotating GM group. We take turns. What are some of your experiences with those different type of groups and how this works as far as that goes?
Nobody out there on the internet is going to be surprised at my answer. Spreadsheets, a spreadsheet. In my heyday of gaming, which, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm loving my gaming life now, but my heyday of gaming, me and two roommates, all gamers, that's how we actually met, was, you know, at the D&D table. And we got off work roughly the same time. Well, two of us got off work at the exact same time because we worked together. But we get home roughly 5:30-ish with dinner in hand. Friends would start showing up about 5:32 with dinner in hand. And we gamed every evening except for Friday evening, because that was Rocky Horror Picture Show night. Monday through Thursday evenings were gaming night. Saturday morning was gaming day. Saturday afternoon was also gaming day. Saturday night was gaming night. You see we were playing CLB 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 times a week without fail.
I was never quite that level, but definitely there was a heyday of gaming all the time.
But to avoid one game master cannot run 10 sessions a week, period. Just it ain't going to happen. So we had many different games and campaigns within those games that different game masters ran, and different characters and yada, yada, yada. I mean, just think about all the different aspects that go into a campaign. And we started losing track of which characters went with which campaigns, which game systems, which game masters, blah, blah, blah. So I created a filing system for all the character sheets. All the character sheets lived at our house. And so I created a filing system for every campaign and all the notes and character sheets that went with it, and a spreadsheet to keep track of game master, players, characters, game system, like a blurb about what the campaign was, so we could quickly remember, oh yeah, that's this D&D campaign, not that D&D campaign or whatever. This lasted for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. So yeah, rotating GMs right there. Because it was, if we wanted to game 10 times a week, like we were doing, you got to rotate GMs.
Yeah, I think it's something to point out that in my modern life, many, many years removed from those college days, we want to keep gaming on a bi-weekly basis, and we have rotating GMs.
There you go. Yep.
Now, Jared, I've been playing in your Thursday games for like the last 3 years, and you work it a little differently. You don't have a single group. You basically decide you want to run a game and invite particular people for that.
What's been nice about that is, especially now that we have the internet and things like, you know, Discords, where I can share this out to a bunch of people that I'm friends with, I now have like a bunch of people that I'm friends with and people that I've gamed with, and I can say, hey, I'm planning on running this night. Who's interested? And it's almost like a little gaming collective.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is I have that on my Discord server, but I'm also part of other people's Discord servers, and it kind of works the same way with them, where it's just sort of like, you know what, I'm going to start up this game, and whoever's in the community that is interested in jumping in. And what's nice about that is when it's something like a Discord community, you don't have that same issue like if you were to, say, post on the internet in general, like out to Blue Sky and say, hey, who wants to game with me?
Right?
You know the people that are part of this particular community, but you're not sitting there going, please don't say yes. Please don't say yes.
Yeah, you get the thundering herd of randos running towards you.
Or when you put your physical address on the post-it note on the corkboard at the game store and somebody just shows up.
Oh,
I made that mistake. I made good friends that way. I made really good friends that way. I've had bad human interactions with that as well. So, but hey.
I mentioned when I took over during the pandemic. Now, that's a slightly different circumstance because we regularly rotated GMing anyway, but it was a particular circumstance where somebody had to step in if we wanted to keep running. And I kind of felt like I was in the best position to run during that tumultuous period. But what are some times where you guys have basically stepped in to run so that gaming stays around?
That Rogue Trader game that I mentioned, part of why I ended up running a Warhammer 40K game was because that group was playing Deathwatch, which, if you've seen any of the 40K RPGs, Deathwatch is when you're playing the Space Marines. And I wanted to, I was a player in that game and I wanted to make sure everybody could keep playing, but I did not want to run Deathwatch. I did not have a lot of confidence in coming up with military skirmishes week in and week out that would have felt right for that. So that's when I look for, okay, what else in 40K, can I keep the interest going of everybody that's in this group, but is still more suited to me? And that's where the Rogue Trader game ended up coming from.
What about you, JT? Is there something more modern?
Yes, but no specific stories, really. No. It's just I am always ready to step up. I have something in my back pocket, multiple somethings, really. I've got anywhere from 3 to 10 games, whether they're one-shots or the beginning of short story arcs, sitting in my back pocket, ready to go. That way, when the GM says, I can't make it, or I can make it, but I'm not prepared, or everybody's getting together, but I can't run the game for whatever reason, I can be like, cool, we use Discord for our group. I'll slap up a poll and say, here's your options for me to run a game. Pick one. If somebody else steps up in our, we have a group of six that is consistent. Of those six, four are able to run games. And I'm not saying that the other two are not able to. They're just, I chose the wrong word. Two don't want to be game masters.
Which is completely fair.
Which is
enough.
Cool. That is awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is awesome. Because we need players, right? Typically, we need more players than game masters. Not always, but two don't want to run games, and we're cool with that. So there's four of us that can, I guess three of us could step up to replace the current GM on a moment's notice. I tend to be the one that's more prepared. Surprise, JT's prepared.
It's all the spreadsheets.
It's all the spreadsheets, yes, yes. That's where I get my poll material from. I want to run these games spreadsheet with like campaign ideas in there and stuff. And I slap it into Discord and let the players vote. And whatever they pick, I run. And if there's a tie, I get to be the tiebreaker. I get to pick out of the two or three that tie, the one that I'm more jazzed about. So, I don't have any specific stories, but just be prepared. If you're a GM in a group, like a potential GM in a group, but you're currently a player, have at least one thing ready to go, just in case. That's my advice right there.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, I started the Depths of Zendrick campaign. I was noodling around in the back of my head an idea for starting up another D&D Eberron game. But we were in the middle of a Traveler campaign, so there was going to be, I don't need to run this. And then I happened to mention to the GM of the Traveler game, I'm like, I've been kind of pondering this idea. What do you think about it? And he's like, can you start next month? Sure.
Right.
Basically, he wanted to keep running the Traveler game, but his job was just getting too busy with travel and work and deadlines that he was like, I need to step away from this. So I stepped in to run my game.
Cool.
So what are the things we should be aware of when it comes to transitioning the players to that new game? And we're talking about a situation where these players haven't played with you as the GM before, but you're stepping in to run a new game.
One of the things I was going to bring up with this topic is my horror story about doing this. And that is, to make this a teachable moment, I will say, make sure that you have a clear expectation of what everybody wants out of the game. Because I took over an Age of Rebellion game, Star Wars game, at one point in time. And I decided I don't want anyone to have to make new characters. So we're going to basically, they did their last mission for the last GM. Then they're going to go to a new system and I will have everything that I'm planning on doing. So I had my ideas. So it's going to feel like a new campaign for me, but they can all play their same character. Problem with this is we had a player who had arranged with the GM that his character was an Imperial spy. I tried to talk to them and say, hey, you know, I know that you're doing this. You know, I just want to make sure this doesn't blow up in everybody's faces. So this is what I would like to do. Like, your handlers are going to be telling you to work with the party up until this point, and then when we reach this point in the campaign, then you can make that decision. I even said it this way: you can make that decision. Are you going to be redeemed and then turn against the Empire at this point, or, you know, are you going to do that? But then we'll at least get to that one junction in the campaign before all of this happens, so that way we don't need to worry about you undermining the players week in and week out. And then we proceeded to have him undermine the players week in and week out. And
of course,
everybody was extremely mad at him and the campaign fell apart. So when you inherit a game, make sure that you are okay with all of the parameters of what you're going to be doing and understand what people expect when they're bringing into the game. And I would not recommend anything that is too wonky. I'm not saying you should never take players that, you know, and their characters that they've already been playing. I'm saying if they have some kind of high concept that you as a GM would not have suggested for a campaign, don't do it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. A new session zero, even for existing characters and an existing story, an existing world campaign, all that, you need a new session zero. You really, really do to sit down and discuss all these factors. Just like Jared was talking about, what are your expectations? What are your goals as a player? What are your character goals? Why does your character have that goal? Motivations. Did you have any secrets between you and the GM? I don't advise that, like, ever.
At least not on that scale.
Yeah, not on that scale. But if you had character secrets with the GM, I got to know those now. And are you willing to abandon those secrets if I can't incorporate them or can't merge them into the story ideas that I'm coming up with to continue the characters moving forward?
Yeah, I know there. It can be very tempting to pick up an existing game and keep running with it, especially if everyone's been enjoying it with the original GM and all of that. But you gotta go into it really, really carefully, because you're not the previous GM. There's gonna be different expectations. And that's not even getting into something like the GM set the game up to be PvP with a secret hidden spy.
Right.
Yeah.
In some ways, I think it might be easier, like, if it's a situation where the GM just can't keep running, but you want to keep playing with those people, do a completely different game in a whole new genre. Because that's going to, you know, it's going to allow the players to transition to you as the GM easier than if you're just trying to pretend to be the other guy.
Yes. Yeah, it's a big reset button. It's a fresh start, yeah. Clean slate for everybody, you and the players. I honestly prefer doing that. I have never actually taken over an existing game and ran it with existing characters, existing storyline. I've never done that because I don't want to. There's too much baggage for me, and I just don't want to deal with that.
I've never done that directly. I have liberally borrowed ideas from other GMs and previous games.
Oh, sure.
But never directly said, I'm running a game in this GM's universe.
Right.
At the same time, I will say I have been the player who has transported a character from one game to a different game.
That's fair, because that's your creation. That's your baby to carry around, right?
Yeah, it's usually when I feel dissatisfied with the gameplay I got with that character in the previous campaign. Because there were stories I wanted to tell with that character. Please let me do them. I did that with my my reincarnated King Arthur character. King Arthur was reincarnated into a woman, and that was my character.
Cool.
And so the first game, it was very modeled on Young Justice, that style of campaign where they were teenagers and all that. We played like twice and then never played again. And I really, really liked that character. And so when a buddy wanted to run a superheroes campaign set in the 1970s, I'm like, can I use this concept and just, tailor her to be more of an adult in the 70s? And he's like, oh yeah, she sounds fantastic. Let's go.
Cool.
So as a player, yeah, you can recycle your concepts, but it's a little different when you're a GM recycling a whole campaign.
And I think sometimes a problem where you definitely, like as JT said, you really want to have a new session zero, even if you're keeping the same characters, is that people can use language for similar things and mean different things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, depending on the game, you could say, oh yeah, I use optional critical hits. And what you mean is somebody does extra damage. But their last GM had this card set where, you could make somebody's head fly off in another galaxy if you hit them.
Right.
And that is not what you were planning on using. And then, you might have some disappointment because you used a term that people understood to have a definition, but you weren't quite in sync there.
I think even in a group where you regularly rotate GMs, you have to be prepared for those moments like. It's like the players are your child and you and the other GM are parents. Well, dad would have done it this way.
Right.
You just have to be prepared for those moments.
Sure.
And like, I've never really had those situations come up in my Saturday group where we rotate GMs because we're all pretty appreciative of each other's styles. But I can see that type of situation causing a little bit of friction. If the players are expecting the game to go one way, the previous GM used to run it, and then you're running it slightly different, and,
Yeah.
It's just something to be aware of.
Yeah, if you've got your own house rules, like your own house rules that you want to apply to an existing game, document them. Type it up, put it in a Word doc, print it out, hand it out to the players, right? Now, there's the danger that they won't read it. However, if it's more than two pages, maybe three, they're not going to read the whole thing, right? However, if your house rules are more than like two or three pages single spaced, you're playing the wrong game. You've made a new whole new game. That's a whole another topic. You've house ruled your way out of playing D&D and into playing JT's Fantasy Realms or whatever. So keep the house rules to a minimum, but document them.
I also think there are things. When I'm talking about doing similar things too, it's interesting because if I were to understand all of the nuances, sometimes we don't have the language for things until something blows up in our face. Because if I were to have the language that I needed in that campaign that I was talking about with the Secret Imperial, I personally am fine with that type of character, but I don't want it to be a secret. I like the part, I trust my group more or less to understand the dramatic irony of all of you know they're a spy.
Sure.
But your characters do not.
Right.
Because then it doesn't turn ugly.
Yeah, there's the player secrets and the character secrets, and those are two different things. Related, but different. And I believe Phil and Cinda did a whole, like, two-part Pandas Talking Games episode,
mm-hmm.
episodes on the, secrets and how they work and really how they don't. So, yeah.
This is a whole other topic. On one hand, I enjoy having the players discover things about the characters through play, but you want to make sure those are not the type of secrets that are going to blow up in people's faces and cause hard feelings in the players rather than the characters. And it's a really, really hard line to walk. So it's generally better to not do it if you can avoid it at all. Like I say, I say this as somebody who enjoys those surprises as things are discovered through play. So I've seen both sides of the spectrum where it's been absolutely amazing. And then it's been like, wow, you thought that was going to go really differently, didn't you?
Right.
And that's actually one of those things that I appreciate when you really get to the heart of what people mean when they say play to find out, because I was just thinking about like our Coriolis game and like everybody knew what Narumon was like. Nobody knew what Narumon would act like, including myself, until he saw somebody get killed that he thought he was protecting.
Right.
And that wasn't like a player secret. That was I am playing this character and I know how this character would react and he's going to react very badly. And I never even thought of this until we got to this point.
Oh yeah. It was a really powerful moment in the game. And I think everyone was kind of like, oh, is Jared okay?
Yeah. That's why right after that I stopped and said, Narumon is upset. Jared is fine.
There you go. I've had to do that where I portrayed a NPC reaction so strongly that somebody like reached out, put their hand on my shoulder and like, you okay, dude? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And it's an immediate switch for me from NPC to me. And be like, no, I'm fine. Why? And then I rewound like the last 3 minutes of gameplay. And I was like, oh, I got really intense there. Cause I got like into the character. I've also got a theater background. So I did that for a handful of years in school. So yeah.
Well, I think we've covered most of this topic. Is there any last things you want to say about basically stepping into the GM role for a group?
I was just going to say, like, sometimes when it comes to you running a game, you can't necessarily run a game exactly like someone else is going to. But I think some of the things that are more like social contract things, you can definitely have as a common thing from one group to another. Like, if you know, okay, if we have 75% of the group, we're going to go ahead and run, even if somebody's missing, or, you know, we'll run if we get up to a half an hour late, but if it goes later than that, we'll just blow it off and do something else. Like, that kind of social contract stuff does create continuity outside of the personality quirks that somebody has when they're running a game.
Yep, yeah, that's fair.
And you, JT?
And what I was going to add was, if possible, and you're taking over an existing campaign with existing characters and stories and all that, if possible, meet up with the old GM for, I don't know, coffee, beers, pizza, whatever, and get his notes, get his or her notes. And even if they don't have the notes like written down or whatever, just sit and have a conversation with them about what were your plans? What were your goals for the campaign? What story elements were you going to introduce that you've set up that you've yet to expose to the players? And that can help streamline and smooth out things for the players with the change of GM. Having said that, you don't have to take the old GM's notes as a sacred holy text and just straight up use them as they, because you're going to run the game differently. There's no way to avoid that. So put your own spin on it. Maybe you use some of their material. Maybe you're like, wow, I don't want to do that, or I can't do that, or I won't have fun doing that, or whatever. You just throw it out and you make up your own stuff.
Yeah, I think the key to that would be specifically, what were his intentions with certain NPCs or things they have interacted with? And what were his intentions for the various PCs in the game?
Yeah.
Like, because those are things that you may want to try and carry through. But again, you know, I still think it's better to just start a whole new game.
Agreed. Oh, yeah, I'm totally there.
I think my last note I'll say before we start getting out of here is, if you are a GM and you need to take a break, ask somebody else to step in.
Mm-hmm.
This is a communal hobby and we should be there to support each other. And even if you feel like you should be the forever GM, there are times where you need a break too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no shame in, because you're not quitting on them. Because if you're not having fun running the game, they're not going to have fun playing the game usually.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to provide no experience than a bad experience.
Yeah. That's hard to learn.
It is. Yeah. Because you're not letting them down. You're not going to hurt them, right? Maybe you are going to let them down, but that's better than causing harm.
This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can be a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link at the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, so our patrons help us keep it going. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out.
Misdirected Mark Plays. Phil, Chris, Bob, and Jerry play and discuss a campaign they've created and are playing. Now, instead of just hearing them talk about the theory of gaming and game mastering of the games they're playing, you can actually hear what they do at the table. It's come full circle in their exploratory play series, MM Plays.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, GnomeStew on Blue Sky, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Gnomes, is there anything else you'd like to give a shout out to today? JT, go.
All right, I'm going to talk about the Mini Dungeon Tome and the Mini Dungeon Tome 2 from Adventure a Week Games, or AAW Games. I think it's the actual company name, but it's short for Adventure a Week. I've got them both. I bought the first one retail and landed the second one off Kickstarter. Both of the ones I have are for 5th edition D&D, but the creator supports Pathfinder as well and other versions of the book. Regardless of which fantasy style game you're playing, these are easily usable and convertible for your system. They're packed with fantastic, I call them one-bite mini dungeons for side quests, maybe a one-shot, probably not a full one-shot, to be honest with you, or use in an existing dungeon complex, so on and so forth. They're really, really well done. Personally, I use them for playtesting the RPG that me and my two buddies are making. That way we can make some characters, and it's a quick scenario to run through and figure out, oh, there's a trap here. How do our trap rules work? Or do our trap rules work? You know, go from there. So I've been getting a lot of use out of these two books.
Nice.
And they're very well done. We'll have a link to the two different product pages for the two books in the show notes.
Nice. Jared, do you have anything you'd like to give a shout out to?
Well, first off, I think if you look hard enough, you may also find Gnomes 2 Official on Instagram and Gnomes 2 Official on Threads as well.
I forgot to add those to that. Thank you for calling me out.
The thing that I wanted to bring up is Evil Hat has an anthology of games called Stewpot that is going to be coming out on BackerKit soon. And the whole point of this is it's a bunch of mini games where you are role-playing retired adventurers in a fantasy setting that have started running an inn.
All right.
And I love this concept. Forget the book now. Oh my gosh.
The lattes, literature lattes. Is that what? Yes.
Yes.
Travis Baldry. Yeah. Great book.
I love that book. And it reminded me of that. I just love the idea of like, what do adventurers do when you're done adventuring and what is that going to look like? So I am looking forward to backing this and looking at this. Plus, it's called Stewpot. I think that maybe if we talk to the people at Evil Hat, we could get a Gnome Stew special cover for the.
Ooh.
Maybe we could convince them to do that as a stretch
there
goal.
You go.
And I also see them slowly backing away into the bushes. The thing I want to give a shout out to is you will have heard in this episode, Jared mentioned his character Nariman. Nariman is from our Coriolis game, which is a Free League game. Free League is currently kickstarting a new Coriolis game. It's not a sequel. It's set in a slightly different adjacent setting. I don't want to say universe, but it's adjacent to the original game.
Yeah, if you read the story of the current game, you understand where this is taking place.
Yes.
But yeah.
But it's called Coriolis the Great Dark. There are 20 days left to go on the campaign. They are more than funded, but this is looking like an interesting game. And if you've enjoyed any of Free League's Year Zero games, this might be one to check out.
Cool.
I've already backed it. So, yeah. So, do you guys think we did well enough to avoid the stew, or should we find somebody else to take over the stew pot duties this week?
We could do that. Also, I'm still working the sponsorship deal. So,
there you go.
It's a stew pot.
I'll hand my notes to somebody else before they hop in the pot for me.